Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, this is John Havens. I'm Vice President of Business Development for Blog Talk Radio, coming to you live with a series of continued interviews today from the BEA Book Expo in Los Angeles. Very excited to be having Mr. Don Felder. We've got about 20 minutes with him before he has to run off. And very excited to have Don with us. He is the author of Heaven and Hell, and he was with this little band you may have heard of called the Eagles. I'm actually quite familiar with them. So, Don, thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, it's a pleasure, John. I'm glad to be here. It's quite an event here at the Book Expo in Los Angeles. It's huge. I didn't realize how big it was.
Oh, it's massive. You had a wonderful line, too. A lot of people coming up to get the signatures and stuff, so that's got to feel good.
It feels really great, especially, you know, it's my first book. I haven't really published anything other than music before now, and the response has just been delightful. Everybody's been very excited about getting a copy, and the people that have read it and posted reviews and responses, about a lot of 5 stars, a couple of 4 stars, but other than, for the most part, it's been really strong.
Well, I know, being a music fan myself, and of course the Eagles, everyone has the album that outsold every rock album, you know, Best of Eagles. So, of course, I'm dating myself, but of course, you know, 2 cassettes because they kept getting worn out. I rebought it. So, for me, reading the book, I really appreciated getting a more intimate sense of, like I told you before the interview, a kid from Florida in love with B.B. King, had no idea all this would happen to him. So, tell me, how did the book come about?
Well, you know, I within the same year, I guess it was the year 2000, I had gone through a long divorce from my wife of 29 years, and I wound up leaving the Eagles in that same year. And I was sitting in my office one day kind of wondering how I had gone through my life to get to this point. And so I sat down and started typing out on the keyboard kind of stories from my life back in my childhood. And it was just a real interesting concept for me to go back to how a little kid that was born in a dirt road in the middle of the palmetto fields of North Florida had gone from sort of destitute poverty and to being in one of the largest bands in American history and having had the success and the ride that I had had. And it was a kind of cathartic and therapeutic process for me. Every time that I had looked back at something that had happened to me in my life that at the time seemed devastating or really awful, it actually had turned me into the place where I was supposed to be, which is wind up in the Eagles. So I looked at where I was at that point and said, you know, this is just another door that's closing and another door is opening. It's leading me to a new area where I'm supposed to be. So I started developing this book idea as more of a therapeutic, cathartic process for my own understanding, and it turned into be 300 and something pages by the time I was done.
Well, it's a wonderful story, wonderful journey in terms of, I love how it opens up, how you're starting there in the concert, and it's a really vivid picture, you know, and everyone wants to be the rock star, you know, and it talks about, it's a great way to open it. So, wondering, there's aspects to the story that have been quiet for a while. Was the timing something where you mentioned the catharsis? Tell me about, you know, what was it with regards to the writing process that you really wanted to tell about your journey?
Well, really, I just wanted to spell out my own life kind of for myself, that whole experience. Like, you know, it's a whirlwind when you actually step into a situation that becomes a massive success like that, whether it's a television show or a movie career or a music career or athlete, that you go from college football into pro and all of a sudden you're on the big stage and you're making huge amounts of money. It's a huge adjustment. And a lot of people that wake up every day and play air guitar, you know, and think of fantasizing of what it's like to be in a huge rock star band like that, they really don't understand what it takes to get there and what it's like when you're in the fast lane and what the good parts of it are and what the real hard, difficult parts of it are. And that's why it's spelled out in this book, Heaven and Hell, all the beautiful parts of going through that trip and kind of all the difficult times as well. So it's a good snapshot into really what life in the fast lane is all about.
Well, and I have to say, you know, writing something like, I mean, all the music that you guys have written, but, you know, specifically something like Hotel California is so iconic. But also, I often think the line, we were all just prisoners here of our own device. I mean, that's not, you know, I love rock and roll in general, and I love Chuck Berry, but it's kind of the bubblegum lyrics, like, and then you come out with something as heavy as that. I mean, what was writing that song like for you and then having it take on the cultural iconic status that it has?
Well, it started taking on a life of its own. You know, nobody in the band was from California. We were all raised in different parts of the United States, and we had all driven into L.A. on Route 66. And I don't know if you've ever driven in during the summer at night, but from about 100 miles out, you can see the glow illuminating on the horizon of what Los Angeles is. It's hovering with just an incredible energy there. And as you're driving in, you can just imagine all the stories and all the visions and all the images you have in your mind of what Hollywood is like, and movie stars, and Hollywood Boulevard with stars on the strip, and your record companies, and just that whole vision of what you imagine you're going to be walking into is there. And then once you get there and you get involved with it, you really start to see what life in the fast lane truly is. And so we started developing this idea of putting that into a song, because, like I said, a lot of people have that image of playing air guitar and wanting to be in it, in that scene in a rock star rock band. And what it's really like once you're in there is it's an interesting story. So the whole song came about from that concept of stepping into Los Angeles and the Hollywood scene, and we kind of set it in the idea of it being in a hotel as a structure that everyone can relate to. So it just took on a life of its own lyrically and kind of developed into this thing. Don Henley had a great insight lyrically into structuring it that way, and forever I've been grateful and indebted to Don for the work and contribution he made lyrically to that song.
Well, it's fantastic, and I always think, I mean, like a Bob Seger Turn the Page, or, you know, like an homage also to just the aspect of like a life in the fast lane sort of mentality. So anyway, you can see my musician love coming out there, so it's a selfish thing, and I want to focus on you in the book. Talk about some of the positive. I mean, so many wonderful memories you must have. What are some of the highlights, some of the biggest, maybe not biggest size, but concerts that stick out in your mind, et cetera?
Well, you know, I think the real beauty of having gone through all of that was the ability, every time we went out on stage, we opened up our set with Hotel California. And it didn't really matter if we were in Australia or in Japan or in China or Germany or where we were in the world. It didn't matter about the language that people spoke. As soon as I started that opening introduction for Hotel California, the crowd would explode with recognition and appreciation. And that satisfaction to know you've written something and done something of that magnitude, and you get to see it over and over and over, night after night after night, was really one of the most heavenly parts of being in the band. The appreciation of your work and your writing and what all it took to get there, that reward of that recognition was really one of the most enjoyable parts of it all.
Well, and something about again, that speaks to the power of the song is it's not your typical, I think you talk about this in the book, it's not the typical song per se to open up a concert with, because it's, what, 7-9 minutes?
It's about 6.5 minutes long.
Yeah, and it's you know, usually people think like really high up-tempo, yada, yada, but it speaks to the song that, no, this is so charismatic, so fundamentally part of the Eagles. What a great way to open a concert.
Well, typically most bands save their real trump card in their show till the very end. They don't want people to leave halfway or three-fourths of the way through the show since they've already heard their big hits. So people aren't expecting you when you walk out on stage to just punch them right in the nose with one of your biggest hits. So it's the shock value of it just right off the bat. Plus, most people aren't late getting to their seats if they know that's going to be the opening song. So it worked really well, and we did that for, God, 30 years, something like that, 27 years.
Oh, it's a tactic. See, that's good. Get butts in seats. I respect that. Well, can I talk to you? I'm going to ask a music question again, just because,
sure.
Boston and some other bands, Skynyrd, you know, the dual guitar stuff that you do on Hotel California, Joe Walsh, etc. I mean, how did you first, I'm mesmerized by how clean and together you would get all those, you know, you would take, you know, a trade 16s or whatever, but you would also get that perfect unison, and same with your voices. How long did it take you to blend the guitar and the music, singing side of stuff when you guys were together?
Well, you know, it really depended on the track. That particular track, Hotel, I wrote about 95% of the guitar parts on a little TAC 4-track in my back bedroom in a little beach house I had in 74 in Malibu. And I was trying to write songs once Joe had joined the band. I was trying to write songs that would really feature two guitar players. So a lot of the harmony lines that I wrote for that song, I envisioned Joe and I playing live. The trade-offs on the ends, the solo, I had written the solo as if I were going to play some, and then Joe was going to play some, and I played some, and Joe played some. And we got down to the studio, and finally had recorded the track. like a year after I made the demo. And we're sitting in the studio, Joe and I had set up, and we were going to record these solos on the end of the record. And I just started playing. And Joe was going to play, and I started playing. We were going to, like, write the end. And Henley said, no, stop. That's not it. No, that's not what? He said, that's not what's on the tape. That's not what's on the demo that you gave me. I said, well, I don't know what that was. That was like a year ago when I made that demo and gave it to you. He said, no, you got to play exactly what's on the tape. I had no idea what I'd played at the time. So we had to call my housekeeper back in Malibu, have her dig through my studio, find the cassette, put it in a blaster, put it on play, hold a phone up to it, and we recorded it in the studio in Miami on another cassette, and I had to sit down and do my homework and learn what I had written for the solos on the end of that. So it was pretty much exactly as I had written it, except for some of Joe's parts we changed and let him do a couple of lines there, but a great deal of that was written when I wrote the original music for it.
Well, and also should comment, you have pictures of you writing the song. I love the pictures throughout the book. It makes it a really nice part of the book. You're sitting, you're sitting there in the beach house, I think?
That's shots of me sitting in the beach house working on that song, playing those guitar parts and figuring them out. I think my wife, Susan, took that of me when I was sitting there, I don't know how many years ago, 30-something years ago.
No, it's great. Well, I'll rave more about how well you crafted the solos in that song and built it and whatever else, but again, I want to make it about you. Tell me more about, in terms of, I know you had the catharsis of writing the book. What's the vision you have for people reading the book in terms of what do you think they'll get from it? What's the central story beyond, obviously, you know, being in the band?
Well, you know, there's a lot of stories and subtext in it. It's just a miracle and a blessing that someone, like I said, like myself, who grew up in a very impoverished circumstance, had the gifts that were given to me musically and the talents that were given to me to enable me to be able to wind up on that miraculous journey. It was almost destiny. Every place that I went had to lead me to another corridor that led me to another place where I was supposed to be to wind up in that situation. And some of the things that took place in my life, for example, in high school, I was madly in love with this little girl who was 15 years old. And one night we got in a huge fight, and I was determined that we were going to go to Georgia and get married. You could get married in Georgia in those years when you were 14 years old. So we started driving off to Georgia to get married, and I totaled the car in this horrible accident. And it was someone's way of saying, nope, that's not what you're going to do. You're not going to get married and live in Gainesville and raise a family. You have other things to do. So there was a great deal of divine intervention that sort of happened to me along the way that kind of led me down this serendipitous path into where I was. And so along the way, a lot of those things that happened to me, there were a great deal of pitfalls that took place in the story as well. You know, I was raised in a very religious upbringing in the Deep South. My mother used to drag me into church by my ear every Sunday morning. I think I still have the calluses on my ear to prove it as a child. Sunday school and church until I was old enough to, go on my own. And then in the 70s, I was drugged into a lot of other things, into promiscuity and the drugs and alcohol and this whole other image that was really not how I had been raised. And it was sort of the other side of a different personality that started to reveal itself. And some of the things that happened to me and that I allowed to happen to me and that I became involved with are spelled out pretty clearly in this book, so that if anyone else has the opportunity to go down a path like that, whether it's in the film business, television, or music business or whatnot, hopefully if they read this book, they'll have a good idea into how to spot those pitfalls before they themselves fall in. So there's quite a few good lessons, as well as a lot of juicy stories in this book as well, that talk about really what it's like backstage and living the life of a super band like that. So it's a good read.
No, I definitely agree. And for all of us, in terms of knowing the hardships, et cetera, that the band went through, it's always fascinating to those of us who love the music to hear the story behind the music and that type of thing. So in that sense, it's a great book. I think I have you for another 5 minutes, so give me the signal if I lose you. So tell me now your journey now. You're an author. You know, what's the next thing for you? What's the next thing for Don Beyond the Book?
Well, I'm about halfway through writing songs at a very leisurely pace and with a lot of different people that I enjoy working with for a CD that I hope to have out by next summer. So this time next year, instead of being at the book fair, hopefully I'll be at a music fair somewhere and talking about my new CD. I have a band of my own that I do a lot of private party corporate functions with that for people like Canon Corporation, Yahoo, J.B. Lansing, those sort of large companies. I do a lot of private party for billionaire birthday parties. Corporate events, like I said, which are basically an excuse for the corporations to spend shareholders' money on unnecessary parties. And I also use that same band to go out and do a lot of charity work. I play for fundraisers for like Cystic Fibrosis and Boomer Esiason Foundation in New York and for Autism Speaks to help raise money for a lot of worthy cause. I did a huge benefit with myself and Alice Cooper and Stephen Stills and Styx and David Foster for Katrina victims about 9 months after that happened. So I try to use what talents I have available and opportunities at my disposal to do a lot of good things for people. I also play golf. I do a lot of these pro-am celebrity tournaments that help raise money for children in South Africa through the Dunhill Golf Tournament in Scotland. I do host another one in the UK for the NSPCC, which is the National Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children. I've spent a lot of time, my free time, trying to raise money for a very worthy cause. So I'm a busy guy, as well as writing a book, and I've got another idea on the way right now that hopefully I can get it together about the same time my CD comes out next year.
So say, it sounds like you just hang out the house a lot. You just sit around,
I'm a couch
watch
potato.
TV. Not pure irony.
Yeah.
One of the quick stories I thought you must have seen, of course, when Seinfeld, did you see the one where Julie Louis-Dreyfus keeps singing Desperado
no.
to impress her boyfriend?
No, I didn't. I've heard about it several times.
It's really fun. But there again, such a great song, you know, being lauded in other aspects of, you know, cultural iconoclasty
sure.
or whatever. So,
uh-huh.
Well, folks, it's been a real pleasure, again, interviewing authors, John Wiley & Sons authors, in this case, someone, of course, who you know, Don Felder, from the Eagles. He's got a great book. I highly recommend it, called Heaven and Hell, My Life in the Eagles, 1974 to 2001. Besides Wiley.com, any websites you want to mention? I know you mentioned all the great charity work you've done, et cetera.
Yeah, I would say anybody should go to Autism Speaks, the Cystic Fibrosis Boomer Esiason Foundation. You can come be a friend of mine at MySpace, at Don Felder on MySpace. DonFelder.com is in the process of being put up as we speak, so I'll have my own website up shortly. And it'll have a list of my appearances, where I'm playing, book signings, CD updates, all that sort of stuff.
Wonderful. Hey, real pleasure to speak to you, and thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thank you. I really enjoyed this.